Welcome to Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with Nadia Kader again. Hello, Nadia.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
How are you today?
Wonderful.
Fantastic. Today is a mini-sode, and today we are going to talk about The Other Side of the Wind. That's my bad John Huston impression.
That was really bad.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Jay can't afford
the Ernest Hemingway of the cinema. Mr.
Hannaford, I just want to know what he represents.
The man is infested with disciples. I'm the apostle.
Just like me and God, how could you tell us apart?
Hannaford's new movie?
The Other Side of the Wind.
What's that about the movie?
We don't talk about the movie.
So you old guys are trying to get with it. Is that what this movie's about?
Well, we don't actually know.
What do we know? Jake is just making it up as he goes along.
He's done it before.
Movies and friendship. Those are mysteries.
Mr. Hannaford, could you please slow down?
Mr. Hannaford!
What he creates, he has to wreck. It's a compulsion.
Want me to bring you another scotch?
We'll have our own movie! A real movie!
The Other Side of the Wind.
We got to talk about two films. The Other Side of the Wind and the documentary, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. So, actually, before we get into that, let's say Pop Culture Man Children is available anywhere podcasts are, everywhere the podcasts live, baby. We are on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. So The Other Side of the Wind, God, there's so much to say. All right, for someone who has no idea, The Other Side of the Wind is a film that was made, it's the last film made by the great director Orson Welles, who, of course, is most famous for his 1938 War of the Worlds radio broadcast, where people panicked thinking that aliens are really landing in New Jersey. And, of course, Citizen Kane, which is the number one movie on the American Film Institute list of 100 best movies. And Welles, as he got older, got fatter and got more bitter and really was rejected by Hollywood because he couldn't really play the game. And he felt betrayed by Hollywood. So this film, The Other Side of the Wind, was a film that he filmed from 1970 to 1976 on and off with his own money, mostly. And then like a lot of like weird money he would get from like, wasn't like the like,
it was like the Shah of Iran's right, brother?
Like brother, somebody's brother-in-law. Yeah, but like, so he'd get money from places outside of the United States and he never finished the movie. The movie just came out this year, 2018, because Netflix put it out. And I've been hearing about this movie coming out for years. And, you know, all the way back in, like, what, 2005, I think, was the first time I heard about it. Peter Bogdanovich is in the film, and he was very, very close to Orson Welles. And he's been trying to get it. And Orson Welles asked him, or Orson Welles told him, if I die, please finish it. So he's been trying to do it, but he hasn't been able to, and now it's finally out.
It was, the footage was also, like, in this really weird legal battle.
Yes.
Between, like, when Orson lived in France, so it was in France, but also the Iranian government or the Shah, who was in exile because of the Iranian Revolution, or Islamic Revolution, put money towards it, so they didn't want it to come out, or something weird, like, so they prevented the movie coming out.
He couldn't get the footage.
Yeah, so it was like sitting in like storage.
Yeah, because it's done. You know, when I watched the film, I went into it thinking this is going to be kind of a little bit of an artifact, and it's going to feel that stuff's missing. But nothing felt missing at all to me. It was done.
It was done. Though there were one or two scenes that really, it was kind of obvious that they filmed it in a completely different time as everything else. Because it would just, like, there were scenes where, like, it'll cut to someone in a doorway and just, like, reacting, but it's, like, you can't see the rest of the shot. So you're like, so something happens, and then there's the guy in the doorway saying, oh, yeah, blah, 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 and I'm like, this is, like, 5 years later.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the weird, surreal things about the movie, which is every bit of it feels so disparate, where it's like, even when there's dialogue of people talking to each other, I feel like nobody knows what the other person's actually saying. Because I think that's how it was. A lot of people didn't know what the movie was. I don't think everyone had the script, except for maybe John Huston, the star. And he was also changing the script. Like, he would have cue cards. So I think, basically, you just had to trust Orson Welles, and he'd be like, stand here, say that. And everyone just was doing it. And it kind of, none of the feelings of what everyone's saying makes any sense, because people just sort of phonetically saying the line he tells you to say.
Yeah, it's very, very weird.
There's also a major character who was played by the impressionist comedian Rich Little. And then Rich Little left the movie because he had to go do something else and it was going way over time. And then Orson Welles didn't have any money left and he didn't want to keep working with Rich Little. So his friend Peter Bogdanovich played the character. So there's a couple of scenes in the movie where you see Rich Little, and even though Peter Bogdanovich is in most of the movie, I think the way it plays is that it's not supposed to be the same character. It's not like he changes bodies, but there are...
But they look very similar.
Right. They're wearing similar dress.
It's confusing. It's that part.
It's a confusing movie. I watched it twice, and the second time I got a lot more out of it. Can you tell us, Nadia, a synopsis of what the movie's about?
Yeah. So basically, it's a movie about the making of a movie.
Yes.
So it has, which confusingly, they're both called The Other Side of the Wind.
Right.
So it is about this aging film director who's kind of like on the outs with Hollywood. It's literally an Orson Welles stand-in.
Right.
Minus 400 pounds.
Yes.
Fat joke. And so he's trying to make this movie.
The French wines.
The French champagne.
Sorry.
We're both doing awful jokes.
It's all right.
Yeah, so Orson Welles, John Huston plays the Orson Welles stand-in.
The director, Jake Hannaford.
Jake Hannaford, yes.
Who even though he's based on Welles, a little bit of the way he dresses and acts is based on Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah, you can see that. The machismo, too.
Right, right, right. And it's about the last day of the character's life, and the film takes place on July 2nd, which is the date in which Ernest Hemingway committed suicide.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, there's so many layers to this onion, baby. So
it isn't. Onion is actually really a great way to put it. Because at first, I really did not enjoy this movie at all.
Is that right?
I was really uncomfortable watching it. I powered through. But the more I thought about it, I took notes. It's
Jake Hannaford.
Jake Hannaford
is basically an Orson Welles stand-in.
Orson Welles stand-in. He has this relationship with the young film director played by Peter Bogdanovich.
Mm-hmm.
He's also being followed around by multiple camera crews. So you're also getting shots from their point of view. Yeah. So their cameras are different.
Yes.
So that's
it goes
really
from black and white to color to 16 to 8. Like, it keeps changing.
It's very disorienting, especially if you're not necessarily a film person and you don't recognize what those differences and you're just like, why does this movie look staticky? Why is this in color? And so they're filming Hannaford have a party showing this movie that he didn't finish.
Yes.
So you're seeing the movie, but it's cutting to the movie in a way where it's the whole screen. So it's not like you're watching, it's like you're watching this movie play, but it's not like you're in the room with them.
Right, right. It's it's a movie within a movie, but literally it almost is like, maybe this isn't the best metaphor, but the pirate story in Watchmen,
where
it'll just for a few pages be this other story. Like the movie, you know, the characters will be watching The Other Side of the Wind, which is the movie that the character Jake Hannaford is making, and we'll watch it for a good portion of it. And there is Oya Kotta, who was Orson Welles' real-life girlfriend and co-wrote the movie. She's in some of the scenes as the actress, but she's mostly in the movie within the movie.
Yeah.
He escaped. Nadia's cat escaped. I love cats. The real sadness of my life is that I'm so allergic to cats, but I love them so much. I follow a lot of cats on Instagram. You have a beautiful cat.
Oh, thank you. This is what I was worried about, because I put him away, but the thing is, he's fucking smart.
Yeah.
Like, he's too smart for his own good.
He broke the fuck
out. So he broke out, and he does this all the time. I'm going to go lock him in another room.
Okay. So sad. You don't know how sad it makes me. I got to get a hairless cat.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So anyway, where were we? Oh, yeah. It's also a birthday party. It's Jake Hannaford's birthday party, and he's on the occasion of the party, he's showing a rough cut of what he's done of this movie.
Yeah, and so there's also like two different scenes of watching the movie, though. So we're in one part of the movie where his like basically kind of number two jolly guy is trying to explain to this Hollywood producer what's happening on screen.
Yeah.
But he has no idea what's happening.
Right.
So he's just trying to like, trying to make a narrative, but there's no narrative.
Right, right.
So is he?
And he's explaining like the shots that aren't there, and he's like, yeah, we're going to shoot that later. And
it's just like, it's really bad.
And the producer's like, can I read the script? And he's like, there isn't a script. The director's just making up as it goes along, which is what Welles is doing. See, this is the thing that this is the thing that makes the movie fascinating, which is everything that's happening in the movie was happening in real life, right? The director inside the movie can't finish the movie, and Welles couldn't finish the movie about the director not being able to finish the movie. Peter Bogdanovich plays a young filmmaker, but he was a young filmmaker. In the film, Jake Hannaford has this resentment for Peter Bogdanovich because he's becoming more popular than him. And Peter Bogdanovich was becoming more... Peter Bogdanovich is basically playing himself. But in this movie where Welles has cast John Huston as him angry at Bogdanovich, it's just like...
It's so much to unpack.
Makes your nose bleed.
I'm wondering what Netflix was thinking. I'm going out with this movie. But so there's that going on, and then there's the people at the party trying to watch the movie.
Right.
But then the projector breaks, so they have to like take the movie to a drive-in.
Yes.
And also the party is filled with like his Hannaford's like yes men, but also with all the filmmakers that are following him.
Yeah.
Filming a documentary.
And
they're
film students, and Welles really has a lot of fun making fun of film students. Like, they have lines like, do you think that the cinema is a phallus? And like shit, like it's a lot of him making fun of film people.
Yeah. And
there's a character at the party who is named Julie. But Julie is very obviously based on the famous film critic Pauline Kael.
Oh my
because
God.
Because she keeps trying to psychoanalyze the director and the director's films. It's
but what's really bizarre is like, did Pauline Kael really go to parties and like and just be like psychoanalyzing filmmakers while they're drinking and having a party? It's like it was so performative. It's like, yes, and this is the phallus or whatever. And I'm like, what the hell's going on?
In some ways it's like Welles making fun of this world that doesn't want him anymore, in a way.
Yeah, but it's
also... Because there's anger there. I mean,
yeah,
there's anger at Pauline Kael in that character. There's a scene where, at the end, Jake Hannaford actually slaps her.
I thought he punched her.
Oh, maybe he punched her.
He hit her with something.
He hits her.
Yeah.
And it's like, is this what Welles wants to do, to hit her? And but by the way, should we even get to this part yet? All right, let's just unpack everything. Let's just pour everything out on the table and
Please. Then
sift through it.
Yeah.
The reason he hits her is because Julie, the character based on Pauline Kael, more than once insinuates that the character, Jake Hannaford, is a latent homosexual and that he's attracted to his male leading men, and that he is sort of closeted, and then, but there are people who think that about Wells.
And about Ernest Hemingway.
Right.
Is that it? So, I mean, was it true, or was it just Wells coming up with, yeah, let's have her say some stupid shit that Pauline Kael would say?
The homosexuality comes up more than once in the movie.
Yeah, and it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, because it's never about, you know, it's never gay people, like, in the movie. It would be like, he finds his co-star who escaped or something. They never right. really talk about that. He just like...
Right, the leading man walked off the movie, within the movie.
Right.
Which is why they can't finish it.
Yeah.
And they also ran out of money, I think.
Yeah, it was like, it was a lot of things.
Right.
Which is basically what happened to Orson Welles when Rich Little left, and like, it's too much.
Right.
Yeah, so they find, for some reason, he gets one of his yes men to find the school teacher that knew the actor, and you're like, no one explains why he wanted
right,
him.
Right, he says, bring me the teacher of the actor who walked off to the
party.
To the party.
Why?
Well, I don't know, because the teacher then basically, he starts to talk about how there was a teacher at the school who there were rumors between about him and the star, which this is a very old-fashioned, horrible thing where they're equating pedophilia and homosexuality,
right,
which is offensive. But then the school teacher says to Jake Hannaford, played by John Huston, something like, but you understand. Like, basically, and then John Huston's like, what are you driving at? Like,
oh, you mean he was a faggot?
Right, right.
I actually turned off the movie after that came out because the look on the teacher's face was the same face I had.
Right.
I was so shocked because right. it was so aggressive.
But then he does nasty. Something really aggressive. I don't know when you turned it back on. But
the
then,
next day.
But then Jake Hannaford's like, oh, you want to take a dip in the pool? And the guy who plays the school teacher, who, by the way, all the performances are all over the map. Some people are so cartoony in this movie, and I think it's because they had no fucking idea what they were doing. And so he's like, oh, okay, I'll take a dip in the pool. And he goes, great, just, you know, you could get changed right here. And Jake Hannaford just watches him with all the other cameras. And like, as a weird psychosexual way of punishing him, he tries to make him undress in front of him, which, by the way, is not the best way to get revenge on someone who just accused you of being gay.
Right.
To make them disrobe in front of you.
Yeah, it was very strange.
Which he doesn't do, but it's...
It's, oh, so much. It's like, it's... I feel like it's a kind of movie that someone needs to, like, write a book about, or if they yeah. haven't already. Yeah, and so that happens, and the leading man is gone, and fake Pauline Kael is punched in the face.
Yeah.
Oya Kodar is also naked, because I feel like that's all Orson Welles
oh,
ever had
her
do.
Oh, he was obsessed with her ass crack.
Yeah, he, like, she's naked every time that he filmed with her. She was always either in something really skimpy, or she was nude, and in almost... Actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, in the entire movie
yeah.
of The Other Side of the Wind, within
she doesn't
the film,
have any dialogue. Do you realize that? She doesn't speak... I think one word in that movie.
No.
In the movie?
No, but everyone calls her Pocahontas, and because right. she's apparently, the actress is native,
right.
but it's Oya Kodar wearing bronze makeup.
Right.
So there's a lot of
Oya Kodar is Croatian.
Yeah.
She was a Croatian artist, and that's how Wells met her.
She's still alive.
Is she really? Oh, yeah, that's right, because she's in, all right, because we haven't even got to the other movie. Okay, folks, I know this is confusing. So the other movie that also Netflix put out is called They'll Love Me When I Am Dead. And this is a documentary about the making of The Other Side of the Wind and the trouble behind the scenes of Wells trying to make this movie and Peter Bogdanovich talking about his role in the movie and Rich Little talking about being in the movie and them talking and Oya Kodar talking about it. So I can't help but read these two movies together because I see three levels. I see The Other Side of the Wind, the movie within the movie. Then I see The Other Side of the Wind, the Orson Welles movie. And then I see They'll Love Me When I Am Dead, which is the third layer, which is, you know, the making of the movie that has a movie in the movie that everybody's making a movie in the movie.
Yeah, this bloomin' onion or whatever metaphor you used before.
Yeah.
Very confusing, but yes. So I read them all together and helped fill in gaps from other Orson Welles understandings
yeah.
that I or musings that I've had already. So I actually watched They'll Love Me When I'm Dead first.
Okay.
Because I knew that there's no way a movie that took 40 years to come out and was filmed on and off for 6 years, I had a strong feeling I wouldn't understand any of it. So I gave it myself the watch the documentary so I could see what's happening and then I can fill in the clues myself. Mm. And by the way, it's a fantastic documentary.
It really is. It's narrated by Alan Cumming, who's great.
Oh, I actually had the complete opposite feeling. I hate Alan Cumming.
Really?
I think I feel like he's an insufferable twit. He's basically the fairy gay mother that every time straight people need some gay fairy gay mother to come in and just be the gay role model, it's him.
Okay.
They literally call him. Like, remember that movie that I think we watched it together? Battle of the Sexes.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
Where he just had this random role as like a hairdresser yeah. shoehorned in.
That's
like,
a shitty role.
Someday, not now, we can all be out yeah, and yeah. happy. And I'm like, oh, I can't. You but do this
done,
every time.
He's done other stuff that's good. I think he's really good in Eyes Wide Shut.
I didn't see that.
He's really good. He was actually just on an episode of Doctor Who where he played King James called The Witchfinders. I get what you mean though.
He also just seems like the kind of jerk that like has a lot of money and just won't talk to
he
you.
Had a cologne line called Cumming.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
You know, he actually lives in the East Village.
Really?
Him and his husband built a built up their building
mm-hmm.
to a point where it blocks all the other buildings' views.
Motherfuckers.
So, like, everyone that's lived there
yeah.
can't see anymore because Alan Cumming and his husband Bastard. Needed to build a bigger building.
Well, you know, while we're in our sort of semiotic, critical place here, maybe we can say that him being a bastard makes him perfect to be in the movie about the movie about the movie.
Because the movie, about a movie is about multiple
an asshole.
Bastards.
It's all about bastards. You know, even Orson Welles, when somebody would ask him, what is The Other Side of the Wind about? Orson Welles would say, it's about a miserable old bastard on the last day of his life. We haven't said that. Or I guess I said it before when I talked about Ernest Hemingway. But at the end of the movie, Jake Hannaford drives away and we don't know if he committed suicide or if he crashed because he was drunk, but he dies. Actually, the very first thing you see in the movie, The Other Side of the Wind, is a car wreck as a still image. And you hear Peter Bogdanovich, who it's him old. So it's him. I guess he just did this.
Right.
Doing voiceover saying this is the story of the last day of Jake Hannaford's life.
Yeah, I realized it was older when he was like, you know, we didn't have video phone, or he said something like cell phones,
yeah,
and I'm
yeah,
like,
yeah.
what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. It actually, that was reminiscent to me of that movie about the guy that dies and it starts with him in the pool. What is that called? It's like narrated by a dead guy.
Oh, Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, that. I mean, it didn't look like something.
No, I get what you mean, yeah.
The voiceover and the death. So we already, the first, you know, few minutes of the movie, we already know that Hannaford's going to die. But
right.
So we don't know exactly what leads up to it.
Yeah,
and that's
how
what
he gets there.
The movie's about.
And
right?
even in the end, you don't know if he committed suicide or not.
You know what, like, I was thinking about that movie a lot and the ending is the leading man comes out, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, wherever the hell he was hiding, and he just stares at him. He doesn't talk.
Yeah,
he doesn't
yeah,
talk
yeah,
either.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, he doesn't talk.
That's true, yeah.
And he stares at him, and Hannaford's in the sports car.
That he was going to give the leading man as a gift.
Yeah, the gift for finishing the movie,
right.
Sure. And he's, they're just staring at each other, and then Hannaford's like, come in for a ride.
Yeah.
And he just won't move, so Hannaford drives off.
Well, he calls him Chicken first.
Yeah.
He goes, Chicken?
You know what, that was a better one, by
yeah.
the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I was thinking about, like, would he have killed that guy? Like, what is
was,
that?
Was fake Pauline Kael in the movie right that he was, is the heartbreak of what's happening in the last day of this character's life that he lost this leading man and he loved him and he's already dealt with the loss of his his protege, who was Peter Bogdanovich's character. It at first when I saw the movie, I thought it was about fathers and sons, and then I realized no, it's about older and younger male lovers.
Yeah.
What the fuck is it?
I
think I liked it better than you, by the way. I actually really liked The Other Side of the Wind. Mm. I see it as cringy and weird, but it's, you can't help but be like, all right, like the main character is this awful person, but it's also an autobiography. So there's something raw in the fact that Orson Welles is kind of being like, I'm a fucking awful person and I might be gay and I've never said it.
I mean, I did appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Orson, you know, in the documentary, they talk about how Orson just hated when people, like, analyzed him through his films.
Right.
But I think he did it for himself, and I think he put himself in his films. Mm. And I think that's, like, it was just his way of dealing with himself and dealing with his bitterness.
Yeah.
You also, we talk about the leading man just left, but there's a reason why he left. And they show that late in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us.
So... So a lot of the movie is just this man following Oya Kodar, who's naked and doesn't talk, and he just keeps trying to catch her, like find her. Not catch her, but come up to her.
Yeah.
And their point because has sex with him. And
yeah, let me interrupt you for just 1 second. The film within the film is kind of a parody of European art film. It's just Oya Kodar walking around being beautiful and this leading man who never speaks, like, following her. So it's not like a Welles movie. Somebody in the documentary says that it's Welles making fun of Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah, or Antonini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we see them shooting a love scene.
Yeah, and it's intense and it's brutal, and it's Hannaford egging him on while he's having uncomfortable sex. So they're having sex on a
box spring with no
no mattress,
right?
So you could see it actually embedding in their naked bodies. Yeah. And he just keeps egging him on and saying, like, you have to do this or something like that.
And Oya Kodar's got scissors, and it I don't know if he there's obviously a castration thing happening there, but it makes the leading man uncomfortable enough that he walks off set.
Yeah, he storms off.
But it's like,
nude.
What was... Yeah. But what the fuck was the castration? Like, oh, what did... Okay. Did Jake Hannaford want Oya Kodar in the movie to castrate the leading man, and that's why he walked off? And what is Welles trying to say?
I think he's... I think Hannaford was punishing him. I think he punished the leading man because he was ashamed of his own attraction to him. So he was pushing this man to have this uncomfortable... So all the way, it's completely uncomfortable sex, right?
Yeah.
It's not sexy. There's the scissors. There's the bodies on the spring. And maybe they never talk about the character, the leading man's sexuality. But maybe he's gay. And to force him to have sex with Oya Kodar and just egg him on while doing it, like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's Hannaford torturing him.
That's a good read. Another way you could read it is Julie, the character based on Pauline Kael, she says that he uses his camera to fuck his leading men. So maybe even though Oya Kodar is fucking him, the John Huston character directing her how to fuck him made the leading man feel like John Huston was fucking him.
Oh, yeah.
Or taking advantage of him.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good read.
Boy.
It's a lot to unpack here.
I think the more I think about it, the more I like it. I like Welles. I'm by no means an Orson Welles expert. I've seen Citizen Kane over 100 times because I showed in class. And by the way, I get something out of it every time I watch it. I do think it's one of the best movies ever. Which is something he hated because he felt cursed by it. He felt like he couldn't live up to what other people called the best movie ever. I've seen his Othello, which, if you could get past the blackface, is very good. I think he really understood Shakespeare. I've seen most of The Trial, which is his film based on a Kafka short story. or a Kafka novel. Mm-hmm. And I've seen F for Fake, which is another one that didn't get finished until after his death. So I haven't seen The Lady from Shanghai. I've never seen Touch of Evil. I'm actually really not as well versed in Wells as I
you did see ought Touch to of be. Evil.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. You and I went to the film forum.
No, we saw The Third Man.
Oh!
Which is...
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a film that Wells is in, but he didn't direct. The Third Man is what? Carol Reed.
Yeah. Wait, what's Touch of Evil about?
Touch of Evil is the one where he plays like the big fat guy with the nose.
Oh, I saw that multiple times. I didn't see it with you. I saw it with some other film nerd.
Yeah, but okay. You and me saw Third Man.
That was good.
Which is a great... Wells was also a great actor. And he would act in other people's movies to make money.
To finance right. The other side of the wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, Orson Welles is actually a fascinating character, and I think he was way ahead of his time.
I mean, I was thinking about this. The earliest movie that I can think about that's a found footage movie, meaning like a fake documentary, is the horror movie Cannibal Holocaust. And that came out after Welles was making Other Side of the Wind. So it's really ahead of its, you know, with things like Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity and even shows like Parks and Recreation and The Office. We're so used to documentary as a narrative style. The fact that he was doing it in like the 70s, I think, is really kind of groundbreaking.
It's utterly remarkable. Like, I wonder if he lived longer, what more we could have done with it. Like, would he have accidentally invented the cell phone? Like, who knows? So that mockumentary style.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have the language for it, but he knew what he wanted it to look
right?
Because it's found footage, like you said, but it's also mocking those film students. It's mocking European cinema. It's mocking psychoanalysts' film style. That is essentially mockumentary.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, and I think there are jokes in it. There are some short little scenes that almost function as like sketches, like short little sketches you'd see on like Laugh-In, where somebody just says, because there's so much atmosphere in it. It's almost like a Soviet montage movie where, you know, there are the scenes with Jake Hannaford, but then there's a lot of scenes of just the party and like people, random people having conversations with each other. And you'll just see like, you know, an exchange between two people that you never go back to them. It's just like two people talking about something about movies, because everybody's talking about movies.
Yeah, it's the way it sounds is really interesting,
because
I feel like the conversations, like you say, also mimic like you're hearing conversations at a party. Like, it sounds like that's another person on the other side of the room.
Yeah.
And you're never like close up. It's never like personal. It's people on the sidelines talking.
Yes.
And reacting to things.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, this is mimicking like you're actually at this party.
Yeah.
So I don't, when did that happen? Because I know there are movies that eventually came out like similar to like the camera
almost
point
like
of view.
What does it remind me of? Like Robert Altman movies.
Yeah.
Where like the there's this overlapping dialogue that's very like chatty and conversational. There's also real filmmakers in it playing themselves. Paul Mazursky, Henry Jaglom, and Dennis Hopper. And he filmed a lot of the movie before he even got John Huston involved. So what's even more, what adds even another weird layer is, in those scenes, you hear Wells' voice, but Wells is supposed to be the Hannaford character. So he kind of is playing the Hannaford character off screen sometimes. But it's funny, Dennis Hopper, you see a lot of him in the documentary, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't, there's very little of him in the actual movie left.
Yeah, he's very, it's such a small role, and it's kind of just like, I forgot about it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so tiny.
And he's so high.
Yeah.
When he's shooting it. So there's another really weird thing, which is, okay, at the time that the movie was being made, all right, when Orson Welles began making the movie, Peter Bogdanovich was just a critic and was writing a book about him. And they were very close. But then Peter Bogdanovich went on and made movies. and he made The Last Picture Show, which was a huge hit, and that starred Sybil Shepherd, who was a very young, beautiful model. And even though she was a lot younger than him, Peter Bogdanovich started dating her. Okay, so in the movie, The Other Side of the Wind, there is this character who's like super young. She's like 14, and she can barely act because they just found this 14-year-old, and she's blonde. And the Jake Hannaford character kind of like hooks up with her, but the Peter Bogdanovich character brings her in as his date. And again, remember, Peter Bogdanovich is playing himself. So it's this weird power move of Peter Bogdanovich plays himself with this young actress who's like a, who's supposed to be based on his real life girlfriend. So it's like already the joke's on him, but he's involved in it. And then the character that's based on Wells steals her. So it's this weird psychosexual thing of like, you've got a girlfriend in real life, and then I'm going to put you in a movie where you're going to play yourself, and then I'm going to steal your girlfriend in the movie.
Yeah.
But then there's also the thing that the Pauline Kael character says that's like, it doesn't matter. The girl doesn't matter. It's because he wants to fuck Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah, boy, it's such oh my God.
There's so much.
You know, you also just reminded me that there is a part where people are trying, when the film students are trying to interview Hannaford and he's ignoring them. So Peter Bogdanovich talks to them.
Yeah.
And they start talking about him and they're like, hey, so you started writing movies before you directed, right? He's like, yeah. And watching Hannaford made me want to be a director.
Yeah.
So I'm like, are you talking about yourself?
Right. Where's reality in this thing? Because, even in the movie, Peter Bogdanovich's character says, I was writing a book about Hannaford and then I stopped, which is what he was doing with Wells. He was writing a book about Wells, then he stopped.
Like, how do you not lose your mind being in this?
I lose my mind watching it. Also, a big plot point is Hannaford goes into this whole thing where he talks about how his father committed suicide in a hotel room and how he feels guilt for that. And in real life, Orson Welles' father died in a hotel room. And Wells was always convinced that it was suicide because Wells, in real life now, we're talking about real Orson Welles, his father was a drunk and he said, I don't want to talk to you unless you're sober. And then his father died and he never spoke to his father again. So he felt this great guilt. So by the way, also, when people would ask Wells if the John Huston character is based on him, he'd go, oh, no, it's not. Which is like, that's the most ridiculous fucking lie. It's so obviously based on you. It even has the biographical, things that you have in your life. He's just not fat.
You know, I wonder if it's that Orson didn't want people to talk about that, or is that just, or he was just messing with them, because Orson Welles said things all the time just to mess with people.
Right, he'd lie. He was a liar.
He was a big liar for show, which is what Hannaford does throughout the whole movie. Is like, if you ever notice, he never really has a full conversation because he knows the cameras are watching him.
Yes.
But he'll talk in like sayings and he'll brush things off.
Yeah, he's performing, which is what Welles would do a lot on talk shows and stuff. He would just be this larger than life character. He would play what you wanted him to play.
For my next experiment, ladies and gentlemen, I would appreciate the loan of any small personal object from your pocket. A key, a box of matches, a coin. Here it is. Good, sir. Hold it up 10 feet over your head and watch out for the slightest hint of hanky-panky. And behold, before our very eyes, a transformation. We've changed your key into a coin. What happened to the key? It's been returned to you. Look closely, sir. You'll find the key back in your pocket. May we see it, please?
After your old tricks, I see.
Why not? I'm a charlatan. What's that, sir? Did I used to be a magician, sir? I'm still working on it.
Which is like, what does that even mean?
But even then, right, but isn't it interesting that's like, that's almost Wells making fun of like, look how full of shit I am.
Yeah. It's like Wells calling himself out, but also telling you that he's not doing that.
But then
that.
The movie never came out. That's the thing. So let me ask you this. In the documentary, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, a lot of the people who worked on the movie and knew Wells said, he didn't ever want to finish it, that it was something he wanted to just toil away with, and that he subconsciously or even consciously didn't want to finish it. And then there's another group of his friends, including Oya Kotter, who says, no, that's ridiculous. Of course he wanted to finish it. What do you think?
Well, then I can't help but talk about The Other Side of the Wind. Plot in itself,
yeah,
is that people also speculated that he didn't want to finish it because he never shows up to the producer meeting to get more money. Why wouldn't you, the director, right, show up when you're begging someone for money?
Right.
Okay. He eggs the leading man to a point where he can't take it anymore. He's filming kind of when he wants. He is he's asking for money, but not really from, yes, people. What the hell's going on? Do you want this to end or not?
Maybe the whole thing, and by the whole thing I mean the production of The Other Side of the Wind by Orson Welles, was all a big performance piece, and it never was meant to come out. It's all like some big multi-layered performance installation or something, or like almost like an Andy Warhol bit.
Oh my God. Maybe. I mean, it kind of reminds me of like...
Because I didn't think about that until you just said that. Because he doesn't seem like... Hannaford doesn't look like he really wants to finish his film.
No. I mean, there's no narrative. He's just filming things that he wants to film. Like an intense car sex scene. The scene where he's chasing the woman in the club and everything's just like psychedelic colors, yeah, and yeah, people, yeah, hooking up. And you're like, is... Like, what's the narrative?
Right, right.
The man finds a doll, and then he gives her the doll, and then she cuts off its hair, right, right, and right, it, right, runs away. And you're like, what the hell's happening in this,
it's
movie?
Nonsense.
If you took out all the scenes of the film within the film and put it together, there is no cohesion at all.
Oh, yeah. The film within the film is just, what, 30 minutes of just a guy following a woman?
Yeah.
And then a couple of very erotic scenes. The scene where there's an orgy going on in the bathroom of the bar, and there's that young girl who's like a kind of Lolita, and she's like sucking on the ice cube, and then Oya, yeah, Kotter rips her tights off and gives it to the girl, and the girl puts it over her face
and like licks it.
It's very, like, especially for Welles, like
it's really intense.
It's really erotic, and
but also the orgy was all women.
Yes,
that's another thing. It was like, what's happening? Why is this here? Why is this part of the movie?
Right. It's like, that's the part of the movie that's supposed to be Welles making fun of European cinema, but it also has some of the most, that's maybe the most interesting scene in the movie.
Sure.
Not just the movie in the movie, but the movie where it's like, what is happening here?
It's like, what am I watching?
Yeah.
You never see any of those women again.
No.
In the rest of the footage. So you're kind of like, did she just casually have an orgy and then went to go find this dude, like, I don't know what's going on.
Right. And then after that, there's a sex scene in the car where
she seduces the leading man while another man is driving,
which is supposed to be her boyfriend. So it's a cuckold moment.
Yeah. And he watches them do it. Like, he's driving and he keeps looking at them,
right,
and they're just like fucking.
But wait, there's another level to that, because isn't it a cuckold moment that Orson Welles is her boyfriend and Orson Welles is filming her fucking another man?
That was one of my notes. It's, yeah, like, because he's always filming Oya's body, and her body is always attracting other men in these movies. Like in F for Fake.
Right.
When there's 10 minutes of her walking down the street and there's just her, and then cutting to men reacting, right, to her walking down the street.
But
right?
Maybe. he is interested in the other men and not Oya Kotter.
Or maybe he just gets off on watching people fuck his girlfriend.
That could be true. He could be, you know, a cuckold or into cuckolding. Or this movie could be one big, elaborate, genius way of coming out that only a filmmaker like Orson Welles could do.
That's why he spent 10, like, how many years on it?
Yeah.
10 years on it. Because he just wanted the world to know that he loves men.
Yeah. It's also interesting that Hannaford dies, whether he commits a suicide or not. You know, was Welles suicidal? Welles, you know, ate himself to death. He was so huge and he was drinking a lot. There's a scene in the documentary where he was living in Peter Bogdanovich's house because that's how poor he was. Bogdanovich, by the way, who he was just being a dick to, Bogdanovich still let him live in his house. And there's an interview with Cybill Shepherd now where she was like, yeah, I wasn't allowed to like disturb him, but I heard smoke coming from his room and I was like, is everything all right? And he had like drunkenly put a lit cigar in his robe pocket and it set on fire. So like, was he suicidal? The only other movie I could think that does something similar to that is in All That Jazz, the lead character is based on Bob Fosse, who directed All That Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And he dies at the end. And it's weird. That's the only other movie I can think of that's an autobiography or an autobiographical movie where the character dies. And what is the filmmaker saying about that?
Yeah.
That he makes his fictional self die.
I wondered if just Orson, like if it fits into what you talked about, where like the theory that Orson didn't want to finish the movie, like maybe he didn't want it to end because he felt like this was the last thing he's ever going to do.
Maybe.
So maybe he just kept going with it because he didn't want to do anything else and he didn't want to die.
Yeah. We should also say he had other unfinished movies.
There's Man of La Mancha.
Yes. There was Merchant of Venice, I think he didn't finish.
There was also a documentary in Brazil that either didn't finish or was never released. I wasn't sure what the story was.
Peter Bogdanovich says that there's a movie called The Deep that was almost basically done, but Wells didn't do like the one last little thing to finish it. So what, I mean, that's self-destructive behavior. I mean, to make a whole movie and then just like lose interest.
Yeah, I think he had like, I think that was like a severe depression thing. That isn't that like the telltale signs of someone with severe mental health issues? Is like they self-sabotage, they don't finish things, they lose interest.
Yeah.
What movie was it? The Magnificent Ambersons.
Right.
He stopped filming and then went off to Brazil.
Right. And he always, to hear him tell it, they took it away from him. But the actors in the movie were like, come back.
They sent him multiple messages. You have to come back. They're changing the movie. We are stuck by contract. They're forcing us to film additional scenes to change the movie.
Right, to lighten it up.
Yes, to lighten it up. And you have to come back. And he didn't.
He didn't do it. No. So he's very self-destructive.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly something going on, which might tie into your theory with Citizen Kane, is like maybe that he felt like he peaked.
Yeah. Something else interesting. One of the producers in the movie, she's supposed to be the editor of the movie in the movie. Her character name is Maggie Noonan. She's played by Mercedes McCambridge. Do you know who that is?
No.
She was an old actress in Hollywood, like not a big star. She was a character actress. But the thing she's most known for now is she was the voice of the demon in The Exorcist.
Oh.
So when Linda Blair is possessed, that's Mercedes McCambridge's voice. So whenever she speaks, and she's got this bawdy voice, and so whenever she speaks in the movie, I would be like, oh, that's the fucking Pazuzu.
Oh, that's fun.
And she was uncredited for that. She had to sue for credit.
That's
because the director was like, I don't want anyone to know the demon's voice.
F you.
Yeah.
She worked for that.
I know.
I gotta say, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead filled in so many gaps for me. Like, I remember a couple years ago, you and I were reading a book called My Lunches with Orson.
Yes.
Which was the recorded conversations Henry Jaglom would have with Orson Welles while they ate at Orson Welles' favorite restaurant. Then it was, and then he recorded hours of footage of, you know, like audio tapes or whatever. And then he just left them in his garage for 20 years.
Yeah.
Before, I think it was Bogdanovich found them or something. Mm. And it was edited by some film historian and it came out as a book.
Right.
And I remember reading the book with you and we talked about it because, of course, there are only conversations between Jaglom and Orson Welles. So we only have Orson Welles' side of the story.
Right.
And also all his bullshit.
Right.
Like making up Hollywood facts and stuff. But I remember feeling like, oh, this is the reason why he's doing so badly was because Bogdanovich kept getting more famous and then not helping out his friend.
Right.
And we were like, why would Bogdanovich kind of abandon his friend with a dick?
Right.
Then we watch this documentary, and then we watch The Other Side of the Wind, and it's like, oh, it's because Orson Welles inserted himself so much into Bogdanovich's life that he literally needed to cut him
right.
distance himself.
Well, also remember, they show in the documentary that Orson Welles went on The Tonight Show, and The Tonight Show is being guest hosted by Burt Reynolds. And Burt Reynolds had been in a Bogdanovich movie that kind of flopped, and they both kind of just shit-talked Bogdanovich. And Bogdanovich was like, I can't believe you went on TV. Like, I'm such a good friend to you. And Welles did something crazy where he wrote him two letters, and one letter was this big apology, and the other letter was this fuck you, like, I'm glad I made fun of you on TV. So Welles is fucking nuts.
Yeah, didn't he send him both?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. It's like, here, pick, it's like, choose your own adventure here.
Right.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, so Welles was...
Meanwhile, he let you live in his house.
Live in his house.
Bum.
Restrict his girlfriend from entering parts of the house, right, and making them buy fudgesicles. What was it? Was so bizarre.
Sybil Shepherd says that they had to always have fudgesicles on hand because Orson Welles ate tons of fudgesicles. Oh, man.
I mean, we shouldn't be making fun of him for being overweight, but like that was like, that's some Elvis level eating.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He there are some sad things, like the AFI gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award, and he used it as a platform to try to beg for money. So like, he does his speech in acceptance, and then he's like, I'm going to show you a new clip from The Other Side of the Wind. And like, he's basically got his hand out for money, and nobody gave him money after that. It's just, it's so sad because it's like, this is your lifetime achievement and you're using it to sell snake oil.
Well, I mean, he's also like, he's kind of jabbing them too in that speech.
Right, because he's like, fuck you, why don't you accept me?
And then give me money.
You know who he reminds me of? And I've also thought this about the character of Charles Foster Kane in Citizen Kane. He reminds me of Trump. Really, the last time I saw Citizen Kane, it reminded me so much of I mean, obviously, Charles Foster Kane's a smart person, and Trump isn't. But the, I want you to love me, but once you love me, fuck you. Like, that's very Trump. And then even Welles as a figure, like, it's this weird, like, I want your acceptance, but I also don't want it. I'm petulant, but needy. It's all, I'm childish. Like, all of that, to me, is like, wow, that's Trump.
I mean, that talks to me about like a serious narcissistic kind of disorder.
Yeah, well, that's true. Trump and Welles are both narcissists. Absolutely. You can't see past yourself. Maybe he believed that John Huston's character wasn't him because he's just too fucking insane to see that it clearly was him. I mean, there's also the old adage that like every character a writer writes is them in some way.
Right.
We haven't even gotten into it. Like, I think if you listen to this episode and you're interested in film, go check out both of these movies because I think they're fascinating and you'll get a lot out of them.
You know, I gotta say, I actually enjoyed them both more thinking about it and talking to you about it. Mm. I think it's something, maybe if it's not like completely your bag, it's definitely gives you something to think about.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, when media makes you think, that's a real gift these days. You
Absolutely.
Have to appreciate that something is making you think in this world.
Yes.
And if you love showbiz documentaries, like, that is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you can't imagine the craziest things, and then they just keep topping each other.
Yeah.
It's the fudgesicle comment. finding out that Orson Welles was still married to his wife when he was just dating.
Yeah.
Chloe. I had no idea.
Yeah, they interview his daughter in it.
And she's like, I don't know why my mom stayed. And we're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
But he lived in Europe. So I guess he left the family and then came back. And he like, of course he's a terrible father, clearly.
All right. That's it for us. This has been a very full mini episode. The Other Side of the Wind and They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, both are on Netflix. Nadia, thank you for coming on and talking about Orson Welles with me.
Thank you for giving me this platform.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. So this is Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. This podcast is available on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Follow at Pop Culture Man Children on Instagram.
Oh, bye-bye.